Welcome to the Passive House Podcast, brought to you by Passive House Accelerator, a catalyst for zero carbon building. For news, inspiration, and connections from all flavors of Passive House, check out passivehouseaccelerator.com. Sign up to receive regular updates about events, get your questions answered, and contribute to the community dialogue. There's loads of free information for experienced professionals and people just starting out on their Passive House journey. We hope to see you at one of our weekly Passive House Accelerator live webinars. In the meantime, here's this week's Passive House podcast. Well, welcome back to a regular episode of the Passive House podcast. I'm Matthew Cutler-Welsh, coming to you from Auckland in New Zealand. And this week I'm joined by Mary. How are you, Mary?
I'm great.
How's things in your part of the world?
Surviving our winter, just one storm after another. But, you know, it's happening. It's bringing water to us. So we're happy about it.
Nice. And Ilka, in Philadelphia, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm getting excited to go to the NASI conference in Boston soon.
Awesome.
And I am happy to just record some interviews there as well.
Yeah, great. Well, we are recording this just before Reimagine kicks off. So by the time this comes out, that will have already happened. So the team's very, very busy getting that underway. But it's great that you have been out talking to people. And we have an interview this week from a couple of weeks ago with some really interesting initiatives and work in looking at retrofits, which is something that I'm particularly interested in myself for this part of the world, but everywhere we've talked about quite a lot as being really, really important to try and figure out. And it is a bit of a challenge. So we're going to get into that. But before we do, I just want to do a quick shout out to our sponsors for this podcast and the Passive House Accelerator in general. Our stakeholder partner is NYSERDA, and founding sponsors are High Performance Building Supply, Glavel Foam Glass Gravel, Ingui Architecture, Minotaur, Partel, Rockwool, Stowe and Zola Windows. And our champion sponsors are Buizo, Gradient, Icon Windows and Doors, Intelligent Membranes, PH Air Seal, Prostico, and Source 2050. Thank you to all our wonderful sponsors, and thank you also to you, our listeners, as well. If you do enjoy the show, please share it and let other people know about it so we can spread the word. And also, be sure to make sure you check out all our Passive House lives and everything else, all the great content. And Mary, you just published a magazine as well. People should check that out.
Yes, absolutely. It's our spring issue, Reimagining Buildings, in the magazine as well.
Yeah, so check that out over on the Accelerator. All right, well, let's jump straight into this interview. Mary, do you want to tell us who you're talking to?
Well, we spoke with Betsy Agar, director of the Buildings Program at Pembina Institute in BC, British Columbia.
All right, let's jump into it.
Okay, Betsy Agar, welcome to the Passive House podcast. I'm excited to have you come and join us. You are now the director of the Buildings Program at Pembina Institute. That's a somewhat recent promotion. Can you tell us a little bit about your scope of work there as the director of the Buildings Program?
Thanks. It's great to be here, Mary. It's always a pleasure to speak with you and learn things from the Passive House Accelerator. Broadly, Pembina Institute is actually a policy think tank. We do research in climate policy in areas such as oil and gas and electricity. We have a program in transportation and buildings and a few other programs. And our responsibility is, you know, working regionally, federally, provincially, including municipally, to help Canada's buildings reach net zero emissions by 2050, which is our federal target. So this generally includes doing research, understanding where the industry barriers are and the opportunities, and working with governments to also understand their barriers and opportunities to put the right conditions in place to allow us to meet those goals.
And for background, how did you get involved in this type of work? I actually read in your bio that you prior were had experience in building science engineering failure investigation. that's pretty interesting. And that we actually had a subject in architecture school, which was my favorite subject. So it's great to hear that you did that. And how did you end up doing the work that you do now?
Well, I think our stories probably are quite similar. When I started school in the early 90s, I was interested in the environment. That was a priority for me. And at the time, the civil engineering degree that I did was quite limited to a lot of structural courses. And as I describe it, it was about the last 2 weeks of my fourth year of, I think it was my masonry course, I was introduced to the concepts of building science, and my mind absolutely cracked open. I was really, you know, wrestling with the idea of being in engineering. It felt like it was just building new and doing more and more, as opposed to really learning what we knew or learning what about what we had and how we could make it better. And that really inspired me to pursue a career and actually license as a building science engineer in Ontario at the time. But, you know, we all have these wiggly paths. I took a leave to do a master's and had children and relocated to the West Coast in about 2010. And I found myself working for a group that was pursuing clean economy. And within that, there was this buildings component. And all of a sudden, you know, energy efficiency of buildings became kind of relevant in a very different context than I had ever imagined it. So I was entering this policy and advocacy and engagement space and could draw on my technical experience, having done the work as an engineer. And eventually there I was in this, this sort of, you know, place where my love of buildings and still passionate about making our existing buildings work better, but thinking about broader, bigger tools that should help us be able to transform the buildings industry.
And that is a perfect segue to talk about the Reframed Initiative, which you were deeply involved in, and I should say still are involved in. And that was an initiative to look at ways to and incentives and all aspects of trying to accelerate deep energy retrofits, if I'm describing it accurately.
Yeah.
And the last I heard about it, Metro Vancouver Housing, who was one of the partners, had issued an RFP for two of the buildings that had been workshopped in a reframed lab to come up with design details for how to retrofit these buildings. How's that going? What has happened since?
Yeah, a lot has happened since, actually. So those two buildings were actually a part of a cohort of six. Three of them are owned and operated by Metro Vancouver Housing Corporation. Three of them are owned and operated by independent social housing organizations and receiving support, funding, as well as technical support through BC Housing, which is a big housing operator here in British Columbia. All six of them are now at a stage of the design and construction contracts have been awarded. One of them, I believe, should be starting construction actually this month. So the Reframed Lab was a process to really explore unique ways of approaching retrofits. They had really ambitious targets, at least 80% carbon pollution reduction, but also other objectives such as improving broadly the safety and health and living conditions of the occupants. BC also is an active seismic area, so there are opportunities to look at seismic upgrades that could be done at the same time. It doesn't make sense to be going into an envelope to improve its air sealing or insulation without also looking at how can we make this seismically safer. Considering things like how to reduce embodied carbon in material selection as we're doing these kinds of retrofits. So we actually, we dropped the energy part of deep energy retrofits, not that we're not pursuing energy reduction, but that we think that actually limits the real opportunity. Many of these buildings won't see another retrofit for another 20 to 40 years. And so this is the moment to really take the opportunity to improve them more broadly than just reducing energy. And so the process that we took them through brought the buildings schematic designs that were innovative and, integrated many objectives. And those defined how the design and construction RFPs were developed, which have, as I said, since been tendered and awarded. And we're really looking forward to seeing which aspects of the original schematic designs kind of make their way through the process.
You're talking about a lab, right? And there are different stakeholders that are taking part of this. Who are you working with?
Yeah, and that was actually one of the coolest parts of the lab. When we were originally imagining it, we knew we wanted real-time design processes. These were real projects. They were real commitments. They were being paid for their consultation on these programs or on these projects. And we were sort of exploring ideas to make sure that they didn't feel, or the teams, design teams didn't feel like they needed to be proprietary about their ideas. We really were kind of worried that there would be this sort of sense of competition. And we did not need to worry about that at all. Upwards of 70 to 90 design professionals were joining the calls every few weeks. Incredible participation, well beyond just the kind of team leads. We had, everyone from the estimators up through the architects participating in these conversations. And there were moments when, a group of mechanical engineers got to kind of play together in a way that I think at least one of them said it felt like we were back in school and working on a project together. And, a bunch of building science specialists would work together. And so they're working across projects, but being able to bounce ideas off. It was really quite a unique experience. And then participating in those, mostly as observers, the building owners and some other kind of external folks who have a vested interest in how we kind of accelerate deep retrofits in Canada.
Yeah, that's really interesting, especially giving opportunity to people to discuss the field that they are usually the only ones working in, right? So that's really great to hear. How about funding? How did you go about that?
That's always a fascinating question. There are sort of lots of different ways lots of different aspects that need to be funded and in unique ways. So the partners, were really critical in that. Metro Vancouver Housing and BC Housing, paid for the consultation fees, for example. We're independently funded. We have you know, we're a charity, so we're supported by different foundations. We had some funding, some government funding from Natural Resources Canada, for example, to carry these this out. I think Canada Mortgage Housing Corporation as well, and I'm sure I'm going to be missing some. You know, all quite interested in this unique process and what could emerge out of it. And then, you know, that's kind of getting the process to the point of understanding what we want to do. And then there's capital funding, which remains a challenge. So as I mentioned, Metro Van and BC Housing, you know, they're putting capital towards these projects, but as you might imagine, they're coming out, you know, higher than typical projects would. These are pretty groundbreaking, leading edge project innovations. So we did work to find some support. We had one project has support from BC and the Canadian government. You know, we have a few different capital funds that were available at the time, but it definitely still remains a challenge in our space.
I know that at least for some of the buildings, there were prefabricated solutions that were being considered. Is that happening with any of the six projects?
So just go back a little bit, one of the hardest parts about the reframed initiative and setting up for the lab was actually identifying appropriate buildings. We wanted to find buildings that had significant impact, that we're ready for this kind of deep retrofit. It's also challenging to find buildings that, you know, are at a stage where they're ready for multiple systems within their envelope and mechanical systems to be upgraded. And what we wanted were relatively simple facades, for example. We were looking at the Energy Strong model out of the Netherlands as for inspiration. And buildings that were sort of similar, and we were looking for some replicability. And one of those solutions that we were aiming for was, you know, is there opportunity for prefabricated panel solutions? Some barriers are coming up against that. One, we do not have as sophisticated a prefab panel supply chain as they do certainly in Europe, and I think that resonates throughout North America. To the construction, there were five of the six of them were wood frame, so there's some question about, you know, the structural capacity of wood frame buildings and being able to retrofit with prefabricated panels, all of that to say, there is potential for one of the buildings to receive a prefabricated panel treatment. I think, and that one was, the design was proposed around mass timber panels, which starts to resolve the problem of whether the wood frame buildings have the structural capacity to support panels in a way that would be similar to the Netherlands solutions. I don't know whether that's going to come out actually in the end. One of the barriers to moving through an innovative process is that our public procurement policies, you know, follow a design bid build process. And so all of the schematic designs had to be tendered out. I think one of them may have continued with the same design team. So they changed hands. You introduce new visions, new understandings of what, you know, solutions should look like, new approaches. So it's been quite an experience actually from a procurement process experience, and not just the actual design schedule. So I guess my answer is a bit of maybe no.
And when you're saying an approach from the Netherlands, you're referring to Energy Sprong, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, there's sort of different understandings about what energy sprung really brought to, I think, the world's understanding about construction. The whole of the Reframed Initiative, the intention of it was to really latch on to Energie Sprung's whole of market development process. So the initiative was intended to address demand, supply, as well as, you know, financial and regulatory and policy conditions that enable these demand and supply to grow. And while that was all going on, we, you know, secured these demonstration projects to start to surface where those real barriers are. They were as much a research project for us as they were, a process to get to designs for the buildings. So Energie Sprung is a combination of market development and really stimulating kind of integrated designs. So having kind of package or bundles of solutions, as opposed to bringing in, you know, pieces of a solution to a whole building retrofit. And in kind of pursuing it from that more whole building, holistic market development process, there have been companies that have emerged out of Energie Sprung who create those whole package solutions that have kind of what they call a magic box that brings in all the mechanical equipment to replace the old equipment, along with, you know, prefabricated wall and roof panels. And that process evolved into some really exciting new technologies for an industry that, you know, is ages old and hasn't really changed in centuries. What those end technologies look like in our regions, I think, still remains to be seen. That's what made prefabricated panel really interesting. But we certainly can't just, you know, plug and play what they came up with Energie Sprung in the same way that we or in Canada.
One of the other, or what I think of as another hallmark of the Energie Sprung process, is keeping tenants in place and doing the envelope retrofit from the exterior. And even if it's not done using prefabricated panels, is that the general approach that's being used? And you said all six projects are moving forward. And I assume, even though energy has been taken out as the only goal, it's still one of the goals, and that reducing carbon emissions is still an overarching goal of doing these retrofits. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, that is a strength of the process. We still are going to see major reductions, more significant retrofits than you would typically see out of projects like these. And I really appreciate that you've brought that up. Reducing tenant disruption was a primary objective and is a primary objective. Vancouver, like many major cities in North America and probably globally, really is looking at I think we have a vacancy rate of maybe 1%. We are really short on housing, and housing for groups that are vulnerable is particularly hard to find. We find that with tenant disruption, it's more than just moving them out for a few weeks or even a few months. It's disruptive to their lives in a way that some tenants don't really recover from. It's disruptive to communities if they have to be relocated, more permanently or even temporarily. So that is a continued objective. I think I have heard of one of those buildings potentially having to move tenants out. And I think that has more to do with additional work that needs to be done inside than the actual exterior retrofit. But yes.
But the other five are going to be doing it from the exterior.
To the extent that they can be, that's my understanding. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. that sort of leads into, so what are the market conditions for deep retrofits in BC currently, or the market barriers, whichever way you want to approach this question?
We actually just recently looked at, you know, what's kind of standing in the way of the supply chain growing to meet this this need. And the two key things that we identified through interviews and surveys was the lack of demand for these things, and a need to have regulations in place that require decarbonization of buildings. And interestingly, a very nuanced thinking about a lack of skilled labor, but not a broad lack of general labor. So, you know, our kind of interpretation of that is there is labor, there is a workforce that's available, but they're not skilled in the kinds of skills that are needed, particular to deep retrofits. So we think those are two key areas where government regulations and policies and programs really need to invest.
And is there anything that municipalities can do to change the demand and also the education of the labor force?
Yes, and that'll depend on the, you know, where they're from. I'll speak specifically about BC. BC is a leader in the country and probably relative to a lot of the world. We introduced what we call an energy step code, for example, that kind of sends the signals of where markets are going in terms of what the building industry is going to be expected to build to in the coming years. I think that by 2032, they will require passive house construction. And I think that generally that has helped to bring the industry up a level. And then we also have, so speaking to your question about municipalities, they have the freedom to set what level, what step they want the construction industry to meet. And there's definitely spillover from, you know, the new construction skill sets to the retrofit skill sets. We also recently, the province introduced the zero carbon step code, which is a bit of an extension, but adds a carbon requirement. So within BC, the city of Vancouver is what is called a charter city, and it has its own building code, and it's able to set, it now has energy performance standards for buildings. It is introducing embodied carbon requirements. They also are quite active in, you know, educating not only the industry, but also internally, because, you know, the building departments also need to really understand how this construction is evolving. The freedom to kind of do that work changes depending on what's allowed in a given province, because that's where a lot of the levers and regulations policies sit in Canada. And there are, you know, you can imagine that municipalities that are low, have fewer resources or are in more remote communities, they can be more restrictive in terms of what they can implement to drive this uptake. And that's a problem that we would like to look at further. Too often, BC is sort of equated to what's happening in what we call the Lower Mainland, so basically Metro Vancouver and a bit bigger than that. But it's one part of the picture. We also have more remote communities, and we're going to be trying to understand that better, what the industry is facing and what the municipalities can and can't do.
From the U.S. state point of view, it seems like Canada has more funding available for retrofits, both federal and provincial. Is this just my point of view, or is that actually accurate? Are there funding streams available for the kind of deep retrofits that the Reframed Initiative was exploring?
I think there's a lot more openness to them. You know, I think we still have the same kind of plaguing problem where retrofit incentives, you know, tend to lend themselves to one-off interventions. So there are a few being designed so that, you know, you have to accomplish either a minimum carbon reduction or energy reduction, or there has to be a minimum of 2 to 3 interventions for you to be eligible for the funding. I think there's like, we're having a shift moving towards that. You know, I think we're trying to compare the US to Canada is always an interesting challenge. At the same time, I was just in a meeting where we were talking about the IRA, you know, that has introduced a whole bunch of funding for manufacturing. And within that bundle is a whole bunch of funding for heat pump manufacturers. And we would like to see that kind of support for, you know, domestic development of products that can actually also advance our domestic our climate objectives. So we see really some really progressive ideas in different pockets, but I don't think that that's much different from the US. We see a lot in New York and New York City and New York State. We see a lot going on in California. You know, I think there's something coming out of Massachusetts recently. And I think that we probably are fairly similar in terms of those pockets of regional innovation and investment. The one thing that is interesting, that we're all awaiting, with bated breath, is the Deep Retrofit Accelerator Initiative, which is a $200 million bucket that the federal government developed to actually fund these market development teams or retrofit accelerators across the country. And we, you know, some of these have been developing over the last few years, and this funding, you know, the feeling is that that's pooling some funding. It gets them out of the cycle of applications and, you know, can help them move their objectives forward. So we're really excited to find out, you know, who those final awardees are. And then the second one is at the same time as the Greener Neighborhoods pilot program. And that one's actually more focused on innovation investment. So it's more demonstration project oriented. So the two programs together kind of collectively look like Energy Sprong. One's more focused on the market development piece and the demand aggregation. And the second one is more focused on, you know, innovation and demonstration projects.
So a little bit earlier, you talked about the zero carbon step code. Is that specific to retrofit, or does that include new construction as well?
That's a new construction code. I was demonstrating that, or trying to illustrate that those code developments has actually really moved our industry quite far along in terms of skill sets and understanding of the need, mm-hmm, for these things. What is in development in both BC and the federal government is an alterations to existing buildings code, which is, you know, will be quite a new regulatory tool for us to be able to point to. And the intention there is that now municipalities could point to that code and say, you know, you have to meet these things if you do retrofits. So we're looking forward to that piece to coming out, and we'll be watching for, you know, some of these more stringent requirements that these preceding step code and zero carbon step codes have introduced.
And you spoke about that there is general labor, but not labor specifically trained in retrofits. And that's part of what these retrofit accelerator partners, or I'm not sure what the exact terminology is for, but that may get funded. That's part of their intention, right, is to help be the ones to guide retrofit, deep retrofit packages being implemented. Is that correct?
Yes, the intention is for them to provide concierge services, so to help building and homeowners through that process, which is complex. You know, as I said, I licensed as a building science engineer, and I'm not entirely sure all the kind of components of my house and how they need to change. And you go through that experience of we sealed up a whole bunch of cracks in our house, and now I get condensation in my windows, and we fuel switched to a heat pump, and so I need to put in ventilation. And you know, ironing out some of those issues from the outset and helping to develop the kind of the long-term process for building owners, and then also providing that capacity building so that the supply chain can start to meet that demand with, you know, the kind of experience and understanding and confidence that we need to really accelerate that.
So is this part of the final work of the lab? Is there going to be a report that's accessible to everyone with all of those findings? Or
yes, we're wrapping up our final report. You know, key takeaways kind of primarily around that procurement process. So a bit on that demand side, how do people ask for these things, and what are some of the barriers, certainly from a public procurement process. Key takeaways on the actual design process. So that experience of going through the reframed lab and what we learned about what you know, designers know and what, where they feel like they're maybe floundering a little bit. And then key takeaways on the actual designs, what we were able to come out with in terms of energy and carbon reductions, in terms of, you know, other objectives that the reframed lab design teams were chasing.
And that's going to be available to everyone online, or?
Yes. Soon.
Great.
And another great place to just deepen one's understanding of retrofits and different retrofit processes and what's going on in Canada is the Retrofit Canada conference, which I've attended in the past and just loved. And I understand that you are this year's conference is going to be held in Vancouver, I think, and you're on the steering committee. Can you give us any hints as to what might happen? What's coming up?
Yes, these have been really great events because we've coming together as a community that really was not a community before. I think many of us felt like we were doing this on our own. And Mary, that's the only spot I ever get to meet you in person. So that's been lovely. It is in Vancouver. I think some of what we're recognizing is that deep retrofits, as I've mentioned, can do more than just reduce energy and carbon. And given that it's a hard sell, we need to start reimagining how we value these pieces. And, you know, two key components of that is adapting our buildings to a changing climate and making sure that our buildings, the energy is affordable. You know, upwards of 20% of Canadians are living with energy poverty and or low income. And when we talk about affordability of housing, we need to also be considering affordability of running those homes long after the contractors have painted their last doors. So I think that might be a hint at what we might see in June.
Great. Well, it's been so great catching up with you, Betsy. I hope to see you there at the conference. Yeah, just it's exciting work that's going on. Are there any last thoughts about other initiatives that you're doing in the buildings program that we haven't touched on that you want to make sure get mentioned?
In particular, the Pembina Buildings team is growing its work in Alberta. We think there's a huge opportunity there. It's a very, very different regulatory environment from BC, very different utility sort of setup, and very, very different climate. And so we're really excited to really take what we've learned in BC and start to better understand where it might, you know, the parts of the country where it's harder to get to net zero emissions in buildings, and to understand like the differences in the contexts that building owners are facing and the supply chain is facing.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was really great hearing about all the work that is happening in Canada. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more. Thank you.
Thank you. It was lovely to speak with you both.
Who wants to kick off? Ilka, what were your takeaways from this one?
Well, I think I was definitely, of course, very interested in the discussion about the panelization or retrofit panels, right?
Yeah.
Of their reframed lab projects, and just hearing about the challenge, or first of all, that they had to find the right or the perfect projects to even consider something like that. Finding like a project with simple facades, and then really looking into, how would you do it structurally to use any kind of prefabricated elements, but also how do you even get those panels? What is the supply chain like there? And I guess I was a little surprised how hard it still is.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too. Because I have this kind of vision of North America being in little old New Zealand of there being lots of products and lots of services and systems available. But yeah, I guess that also speaks to how advanced things are in Europe, and you know, Energy Sprung's been going for a little while now, and there is a bit of a supply chain that's built up around that. I also get the feeling that Energy Sprung works for a particular type of building, and it is not necessarily directly transferable to lots and lots of different typologies or different shapes and sizes of buildings. And I mean, that's one of the challenges that we're facing here when we look at our building stock is just figuring out. And I don't know if there is one. I don't think there is a single solution that's going to work for every single building type. Mary, what was your highlight?
Well, it's exciting that they've had this lab where they got so many design professionals to come together and come up with ideas. And it's exciting that it's moved on to the next phase, a little out of the Reframe Lab, a little out of Pembina Institute's hands at this point, as I understand it, but that they're going ahead with these six retrofits, and you know, these pilots will be happening and available for people to learn from. And hopefully there will get a supply, more of a supply of retrofit panels going in BC. I think the big problem is always that panel manufacturers are plenty busy supplying new construction. So for them to turn to manufacturing retrofit panels isn't really worthwhile for them financially. So
yeah,
that's a
And it's hard. Because yeah, we've talked about in the past that nothing's standard doesn't tend to be standard for existing buildings. It's positive that, and I understand that this particular project is still waiting to hear the results of funding, but the support from the government of Canada investing $200 million, which kicked off last year and is set to go through to 2027 for the Deep Retrofit Accelerator Initiative. We'll put some links to that. But yeah, $200 million over that period of time to really get the ball rolling on this. So there's commitment there, which is great to see. And you know, it's important to have initiatives like the lab trying to figure out the nuts and bolts of how to do that and how to actually do the work. But it's great that there is some backing of some funding there to try and get the ball rolling. And I like the idea of a concierge as being a focus that Betsy talked about, because she admitted herself as a really experienced professional, retrofits is it's hard. It's complicated work, and nothing's always the same. So having someone who can help guide the process and coordinate everything for each individual project, I think, is a really good approach, rather than just trying to systematize the whole thing, because I don't think there is going to be a one-size-fits-all approach to deep retrofits anywhere in the world. So it'll be good to see how that goes. And the other thing that stood out for me was the mention of fuel poverty. This is an issue that comes up in lots of parts of the world, certainly here in New Zealand. I know it's a bit of an issue in Australia as well. But 20% of people in Canada experiencing fuel poverty or fuel hardship, probably on the rise with increasing inflation and extra living costs. But that's really significant, particularly in places like Canada where it gets cold. So that can have real impact on people's health and the wellness of whole communities. And it's something that I always often talk about with regards to housing affordability as being a really important aspect of not just how much it costs to buy a house or build a house, but how much houses cost to operate, which is something that often doesn't get included in that conversation about affordability. And retrofitting can play a big role in helping to address both of those things around the fuel poverty and also affordability of home ownership. So great stuff. Any closing comments from either of you, Mary Oka?
Well, the one other point that I thought was interesting is that she talked about the 1% vacancy rate, housing vacancy rate there. And one of the exciting things about these retrofits that are being done is that they're, I think, all six of them, but maybe it was 5 out of 6, I'm not sure, are doing it from the exterior so that the occupants can see
yep.
the buildings, which is so crucial. And to figure out how to do
yeah.
successfully, I think is a great initiative. And the other part that I thought yep. was interesting is that Pembina Institute, nothing to do with the retrofits, but is trying to work more in Alberta, which I think of as such an oil and gas driven economy, but that they see room for some new approaches coming into Alberta. So I thought that's positive.
Yeah. Anything from you, Ilka?
Yeah, I think one thing that I thought was interesting too is just really looking at the code and using the code, you know, the STEP code, but also coming up with a zero carbon code and even an alteration to the existing building codes, that those, you know, those perspectives are really, really important to really energize all these efforts that, you know, everyone is making.
Definitely.
And it's important.
Excellent. You can find more information about Reframed Lab at reframedinitiative.org and click on Reframed Lab. And at the end of your conversation, Mary, you mentioned the Retrofit Canada Conference. The fourth one is coming up June 12th to 13th, 2024, and that'll be in Vancouver, BC. So check that out if you're interested. I think it's really exciting to see that as an industry starting to emerge and have their own conference and getting people together to talk about that worldwide issue of figuring out what to do with all of our existing building stock.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, thank you both. I don't have any other announcements for upcoming events this week because we're missing Zach, but he'll be back next week. But check out everything that's going on the Passive House Accelerator and sign up there for notifications, and you'll get a program of upcoming events and the upcoming lives as they come out. Thank you very much. Really appreciate Ilka and Mary. We'll see you again soon, and we'll be back again next week on the Passive House podcast.